Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. If you go to MobiusStripPress.com, you can find out how you can download these podcasts and find our support documents and links. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. So if you're looking for more information regarding what is Reclaiming the Republic, you can just go there and download the podcast. We'll be moving most of this data over. I was hoping to have this done back in September when we started the show. However, it is now done, and you can start downloading the podcast from there. We're trying to get these up into iTunes, and we do have some of these on YouTube, and that YouTube link is on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The number you can call in if you have a comment or a question would be 844-320-4299. That is a toll-free number. Apparently, they've ran out of 1-800s, 866-877s, and 888s. Anyway, this is also an educational and grassroots program. It's designed to restoring our republic and placing the general government, or what most people call the federal government, back into the framework and the scope of the Constitution. Many of these shows will refer to previous shows, and these shows build off of each other. Consequently, you'll need to keep up by listening to all of these shows so that you can garner all of the details and all of the arguments that support the concept of republic review. And that's how we can basically reclaim our republic, is the concept of republic review. Again, don't forget you can also download these podcasts on MobiusStripPress.com. And I wanted to definitely thank KSBN for bringing me over. I just came over from the ACN LBS network and really appreciated working with those folks. They were a great buoying to my show and helping me get this started. They were very accommodating, allowing me to broadcast on the 17th of September, which, if you didn't know, that's actually the anniversary of the signing of the Constitution. That's Constitution Day. And so they accommodated me in being able to broadcast on that particular day in 2016. And that was 240 years after the Revolution and 228 years after the birth of this republic. I personally consider the Constitution a scripture. And let me give you a little macro picture of this. If you go through the writings of all of the framers and all of those who participated in the framing and the founding of this nation, and that is within the United or the Continental Congress, those who worked on the Articles of Confederation, those who worked on the Declaration of Independence, these founding documents of delegates that had come in from all these disparate independent states, they all affirmed that the divine hand of providence definitely inspired them, and they witnessed. I mean, Washington, just throughout the Revolution and during the Constitutional Convention and so forth, he was constantly acknowledging the divine hand of providence, that he felt the inspiration and almost like he couldn't do wrong. The time that really comes to my mind is when he was trapped in New York and the Lord left fog over the city until the very last boat, which he was on, was leaving. And that's when the British realized that they had snuck out. He did the same thing in Boston and so forth. So there's no doubt in my mind that the Lord had his hand in the preparing and the framing of that Constitution. And so when I call it scripture, I don't mean it's scripture for the salvation of mankind. I consider it scripture for the governance of mankind. I believe that we wrote the patent on a universal governance for multiple independent states to be able to flourish. And I truly believe that the Constitution is still impeachable, and it is still unmatched by any other concept of unified governance. The League of Nations was a failure. And nobody can convince me that the UN is even close to being some type of a success other than a little oligarchy of bosses trying to gain control over this and that and getting countries to subjugate themselves. There is no liberty embraced within the United Nations. And so it's kind of refreshing to see more and more people bring up the fact that we should be getting out and away from that. So that's in context why I just consider the Constitution scripture. I just really believe that it is a sacred document for our governance, and we need to protect it, and we need to do what we can to preserve it and restore it. So that being said, you've probably also heard me say the term hybrid constitutional republic. So what is a hybrid? Well, a hybrid is a combination, obviously, but in a constitutional republic, most people don't recognize that we actually have two forms or two sides of this power. Everybody that I know that's on talk radio and in the classroom and so forth, they look at us as a republic with a federation. However, when you read the discourses from Madison and the framers, and if you just understand what the 10th Amendment asserts, that all powers not delegated to the general government were preserved and or claimed by the states, then one has to say, well, then that means that the Confederation still exists as well. The Federation just basically replaced the Continental Congress. So the Articles of Confederation, and even in the Federalist Papers, Madison says several times that they literally copied portions from the Articles of Confederation into the Constitution. So in the context of a hybrid, we actually have a hybrid republic or constitutional republic. And that term constitutional republic means that we don't just have a republic that has ambiguous powers and ambiguous abilities for the federal government to do what they want to do, and then the states can do what they want to do, and we kind of maybe make compromises. No. So a constitutional republic means that that is a contract or confined republic. The Constitution and the term contract or compact are interchangeable. And as a matter of fact, you could probably swing a bat in any direction, any of the founding documents, and almost find the inner use of compact, contract, and or constitution. So that constitutional republic refers to that document that enumerated what specific powers were delegated. In other words, what the federal government, or what I call the general government, is one of those things that is very specified. They can't necessarily do what they want to do. They can only do what we delegated to them. And where would you find those delegated powers? Well, any constitutionalist will tell you that's in Article 1, Section 8. There's a listing of the powers that Congress can do these things. Now, there are other little powers here and there, but for the most part, there's those limited and defined powers. And if it's not in the Constitution, then it's something that they can't do. Now, I say they can't do it, but if you've heard the promos, if you've been listening to this show on ACN, you will know that they've been doing it, and they've been doing it for a long time, and they started doing things that they weren't supposed to do back in 1803. The first thing that they started doing was they started overstepping their bounds in the court system when John Marshall basically declared that he was going to do republic review, and he was going to be able to pull in issues and, or I should say, cases that are coming up from the different states and be able to make rulings. And I'm here to tell you, if you read the ratification debates, you read the Federalist Papers, there is no allowance that was ever given or ever thought of being given to the court system to be able to make any changes to the Constitution. If you want to find out where to find to make those changes, Article 5. There's only two ways to make changes, and ultimately, that goes to the states. Penultimately, those changes can also come from Congress, because Congress is the representatives of the people of the states, and Congress is also the representative of the states because we have a bicameral Congress. I'm throwing out that word bicameral. That means that there's basically two houses of representation. And the interesting thing is, I just thought it was genius of the fact that they had this bicameral Congress, because then they protected the sovereignty of two separate entities. And I will get into those two separate entities as soon as we come back from break. But because I'm hearing some music, that means that we're going to be going to the little sponsors that we have. And I'll actually talk a little bit about that after the break as well. Thank you. Okay, I could have made it a little more difficult with the domain name, but Mobius strip, if anybody knows what a Mobius strip is, you just take a ribbon, twist it in half, put the ends together, and it becomes a continuum of a relative surface. So you can actually take a pen and put it on that ribbon and then pull on that ribbon, and that ink will actually write on both sides of that ribbon. So it makes it like an infinite loop, or that's the mathematician Mobius was the one that discovered the Mobius strip and put it out there. And so I used the Mobius strip for my logo for Mobius Strip Press because I have a five-sided Mobius strip. That means there's a lot of twists to it, but if you go to my website, you can take a look at my logo. Anyway, what I was saying before the break was that they actually, in this hybrid constitution republic, preserve the sovereignties of two separate entities. And those two separate entities were the states, because the states have a level of sovereignty over the people, and the people obviously have their ultimate sovereignty. So if they're not happy with what the states are doing, then they can re-elect everybody, replace everybody, and put people in that they, you know, want to serve them the way they want to be ruled. There is this symbiotic relationship between the people and the state. When we first came here in colonizing, there was really no government. There were some contracts and so forth. And so as people said, well, we need to have this, we need to do that, and they started building this each colony from the ground up. Interestingly enough, every single colony was built on different premises and needs. Most of them were commercial. Some of them were religious. And one was, in particular, was a strategic colony, which was Georgia. Georgia was the southernmost colony that was abutted next to Florida. And so what they did was, when they brought indentured servants over and they worked off of their, and as a matter of fact, the majority of the people that were brought over as indentured servants were people coming out of the penal colony or the penal system in England. They were the, you know, the nonviolent crime, the people that deserved a little bit better opportunity. So they'd throw them on the boat and say, okay, well, we're sending you to America because you were, or gave them a choice. But anyway, these criminals came and settled Georgia, and they were given 10-acre plots, where in other colonies, they were given much larger plots based on what the contracts were at the time. Some were 100 acres and even more. And interestingly enough, the reason they went with 10-acre plots was just due to the fact that they would create a higher density of people. And obviously, at that point in time, if you understand militias, and those who listen to this radio show should understand the militias, or I should say this radio station, they should understand militias, and that the people were the defense mechanism from invasion and so forth. And so in understanding that context, with Spain to the south, it was very important that they had a good high density to keep Spain from getting further north into the commercial side of the colonies, such as the Carolinas, Virginia, and so forth. So anyway, these two sovereignties, the state and the people, actually have voice within this bicameral Congress. The states were given a greater responsibility, as we see right now going on with the new president Trump in identifying who he wants for his cabinets. Well, who vets those, or who actually determines whether that person is good or not? Well, it's not the people, it's the states. And the reason they gave that power to the states is to ensure that those people and the states should have a better view of who these people are that are being asked to fill these cabinet positions or judges and so forth. And they want to make sure that that person that's going to be filling that position won't be hostile to the state's sovereignty. And I can tell you that ever since the 17th Amendment, it's been all screwed up, and the states have no longer had any say over those appointments. And the most expensive house of government on the world is the U.S. Senate. If you look at how many millions of dollars go into a given race, even in Washington state, the most contentious races in the Senate are like California and those types of places, where on both sides they're in tens of millions of dollars just for that one seat. And even though there's billions of dollars to probably go into the presidential race, if you look, the power of holding back treaties, holding back positions and so forth, that actually resides in the Senate. And that's one of the reasons why large corporations throw big dollars at their status quo candidates. And they throw this money across state boundaries. And I think if you looked at the Washington State's Senate race this last election, I believe it was maybe, I'm guessing here, I think it was like $12 million and less than $1 million for the two different candidates. The Democrat, obviously, Cantwell, who had probably several million dollars, and it was a huge disparity. And that money that went into Cantwell's campaign contributions, most of that was coming from large corporations that were well outside of the state. So we can ponder on that and why that's a good thing and why the 17th Amendment was good for this republic. But anyway, let me get on to my monologue here. The concept of reclaiming the republic, again, like I said, is a grassroots effort. And it's an educational effort. And so I know that there's all sorts of people out there having marches. Let's go protest the IRS. Let's go protest Benghazi. Let's go protest on the progressive side. Let's go protest Trump. Let's go protest his Supreme Court nominations, his ban on Islam. If you think about what these protests are doing, they're only protesting what I would consider the fingernail on a finger of an appendage. So if you understand, the fingernail is a weapon, just one fingernail, and the finger is a group of little weapons on an appendage. The Leviathan that the federal government has so many different fingers and so many different appendages that if you actually go through some of my briefs, when I brief people, I actually have this picture of Leviathan with all these different arms. And so what happens is the people are fighting their passion. And a lot of people, you know, are very passionate about abortion, and it's a very reprehensible practice. Some people are very passionate about freedom of speech, or the IRS, or, like I said, Benghazi, the Justice Department. I could go on and on and on. There is a plethora of violations. But the fact is that if you are attacking one, then you'll never kill the beast. And the only way that we're going to kill the beast is by going after the real problem. It's not just that this is a usurpation or an assumption of power that's unconstitutional. It's all unconstitutional. And Reclaiming the Republic asserts, and I assert in my books, that 80% of what the federal government is doing is unconstitutional. Well, that's kind of a bold assertion. But if you understand the Constitution and the parameters of making something constitutional, then you'll understand by listening to this show, and it won't take you long, that you will agree 80% of what we're spending. So if you're looking at the debt clock and going, wow, how are we ever going to get that back? and how much we're spending in deficit spending. 50% of what we're spending is deficit spending. And if 80% of the outlays is going on unconstitutional government, if we just stopped doing unconstitutional government, by the revenues that we're bringing in, we'd be able to pay that debt clock or get that debt down very quickly. And there's other ways to get our debt down quickly, but that's a different topic and for a different time. The music that I use, and it was commonly asked, well, what is that song? The music that I use is Fanfare for the Common Man. And I actually hear some of that music coming up. So let me tell you about that music when we come back from this next set of breaks. Thank you very much, and stay tuned. Okay, as we ended that last segment, I was starting to talk about Fanfare for the Common Man. That is the name of the song that I use for this show. There's a few reasons why I like that song, but there's a couple of reasons why I think it's very fitting. Most people don't understand the context of the Fanfare for the Common Man. It was written by an American composer, Aaron Copland. It was written in 1942, if I remember correctly, and I also believe it was requested by the current VP for FDR, who was replaced by Truman, but I believe it was Henry Wallace, who was the VP at the time, and he said, and his claim to fame was that he was asserting that with the FDR New Deal policies, that we were entering the age of the common man. And if you understand what was happening in 1942, going into the war, and the powers that the federal government or FDR was usurping and literally shutting down businesses, I don't believe you could buy a car for a couple of years because they basically monopolized or came in and nationalized the production of cars for the war effort. They nationalized all sorts of things. You couldn't have clothes in green because all green dye was being utilized for the war effort. You couldn't even get brand new tires. You had to patch. And if you talk to anybody that lived during the Depression era, if your grandparents or parents that lived during that time are still alive, they'll tell you about the Blue Eagle program and stores that were compliant with the nationalization standards would put a Blue Eagle over their, or in their store window, over their banner, by their sign or something, to basically let the public know and the government, as or the watchers that were going by, to make sure that you were compliant. And there's some interesting cases regarding this. There was a case where a gentleman was operating, I forget what city it was, but he was operating a cleaners, and he was actually cleaning and pressing pants and shirts for less than what the government standard was. And he was arrested and thrown in jail and punished for not complying to the government standard. If you had a business and the government came along and told you how you had to conduct your business and the amount of money you could charge, would you think you're in the United States or would you think you're in Russia? Yeah, I just have a problem with the great usurpations that fell underneath FDR. And in context to the common man or the age of the common man, I don't think that that was a good age. And so I use this song to think of how we've really started sliding back towards that and how propaganda, great music like this can be utilized to help get people on board with a cause or to rally behind some really failed principles such as the ideologies of communism and socialism that, oh, the government can do much better. They can think for us better. They can make better decisions. And near as I can tell, I'd rather make my own mistakes and let the government make them for me, because when they make mistakes, people die. I think if you keep tally between Lenin, Stalin, Hitler, Pol Pot, Fidel Castro, all these different despots, Mao, we're talking millions and millions of people have died from their despotic decisions and assertions. So anyway, I really love that song, and that is a piece that's by a prog rock era ELP, but I think it's also very, very fitting, both name and the direction that we're going and when it came out and so forth. And so one must ask again, are we at the age of the common man again? And so I want to frame this in a greater paradigm. And let me get to the macro level here. We've got literally two separate ideologies. There are different philosophies that I believe put you somewhere on these two opposing ideologies. And these two ideologies, we as a people, as a race, as a species, have been at a civil war since the beginning of time. And these two ideologies are individual liberty and subjugation and slavery. And what I tie into individual liberty is sovereignty. So liberty is actually your ability to do something with your free will, your choice, but also in a society where there are laws, if you choose to do something bad, then there are consequences and you must be responsible and accountable. So those two things, responsible and accountable, go in hand with your free agency. So that is what liberty is. On the other side is subjugation, where you surrender all of that. You can't do wrong. As long as you do what you're told, then you're okay. If you don't, just bend over and take the lashings, and or you're going in the hole for a day or two, or going into the gulag, and you will conform. You will comply. And so the ideology of subjugation is one of lies, deceit, and dependent upon us or you to surrender your liberties. As a matter of fact, if you go to the Moby Strip Press website, on the very side, this is a quote from me in my first book, civil society is wholly dependent upon the symbiosis between the fundamental principles of liberty, which is free agency, responsibility, and accountability. When these principles are balanced and in harmony with the individual citizens, liberty then can act as a catalyst in elevating synergy within the community and society. These synergies will lead to stronger spiritual well-being, greater productivity, improved health, and development of wealth. And that's what you get when you have a civil society that is in balance in the symbiosis between the fundamental principles of liberty. So individual liberty was not an accident. And as a matter of fact, the individual liberty that was based, or I should say that this nation was based upon, was not an accident or the result of just the sole actions that one would find in the Revolutionary War or a couple of classes of family or so forth. As a matter of fact, from the Dark Ages moving forward, there was a long progressive period of enlightenment that was slowly, slowly, slowly turning more and more towards liberty. Anybody that understands history understands the Magna Carta, especially the history of liberty. The Magna Carta kind of kicked it all off, where people were absolutely recognized that they had rights. And as those rights started eroding over time in England, and that's where the Magna Carta was signed, in England, in, I want to say, 1680s, I forget the date, I apologize, but in the 1680s was when the Glorious Revolution was. I want to say it was 1688 or 1686. Anyway, the Glorious Revolution was where the British basically revolted again and they took back their liberties. And that's where the first Bill of Rights was written. And that's one of the reasons why when the framers recognized that their liberties were sliding away, they basically, as Englishmen, demanded their rights as Englishmen, because that was a birthright that was established by those Bill of Rights, that if you were an Englishman, you were guaranteed these very specific rights from their Bill of Rights. And so that was the genesis of the revolt and ensuring that we would keep our individual liberties and our sovereignty and those birth rights that an Englishman had. But they embedded that into this nation in the Declaration of Independence and our founding documents. That being said, I've actually mentioned that I've written a couple of books, at least in my promos and on my other show, I've talked about my two books. I've actually written three books, and technically, if you look at them, they're really one book. The first book is, I guess, four books in one, because there's four sections to them. And in the first section, it is a historical narrative of liberty. Where did liberty come from? Where did Thomas Jefferson come up with this concept that all men were created equal, that we were endowed by our Creator these inalienable rights called life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Where did he come up with that? Well, if you read the Bible, it's not that hard to find. It's from the very beginning of time. We actually had a fought in the Bible's talking about a war in heaven. You can find it in Revelations and in the Old Testament and so forth, that there was this war in heaven where Lucifer fell. And that war in heaven wasn't over a dispute in a sports game. That war in heaven wasn't over some lady. That war in heaven wasn't over some boundaries, people stepping over boundaries in real estate or countries and so forth. Again, I hear another break coming up. So let me get into this for this last segment. I will talk a little bit more about the first and second book, and we'll wrap it up after that. Thank you very much. Stay tuned. All right, well, we're back, and I failed to reiterate the phone number to dial in or for you to call in. That phone number again is 844-320-4299, and I'll do better at restating that at the beginning of each break. I know I don't have that much time. This is really the last segment before we end the show, and I've got a lot of stuff. As I said at the very beginning, this is educational, this is informative, and it's a grassroots movement. And I truly believe that all of these things are imperative to cover. Some of the philosophies that we need to understand, where did socialism and communism come from? Well, most people, that's a no-brainer, that came from Engels and Marx. No, actually, and I'm jumping ahead here, but that concept, that ideology actually came from that war in heaven, or as I was talking about before the break, that war was literally a war of ideologies. And those ideologies is pretty easy to garner. When you look at the plan of salvation for Christ, and if you're a Christian, which this is a Christian nation, I'll get into some of these facts here, but Christ is not a subjugator. He never said that you got to grab somebody by the hair, take them down into the water and baptize them, and then you saved them. Everybody must be saved, and we're going to do it by force. No, that sounds like a different religion to me. As a matter of fact, Christ was an advocate for free agency and individual liberty. You have to learn the facts for yourself. You have to choose for yourself. And then when you've decided that this is something that you can accept and take his name upon you, then you go into the water and you get baptized and follow his commandments. But you have to do that willingly. Now, on the flip side, Lucifer, Satan, whatever you want to call him, the devil, he doesn't want you to have free agency. He wants you to be enslaved. He wants you to be enslaved by the state. He wants you to be enslaved to drugs. He wants you to be enslaved to your indulgences. He wants to destroy your life, and he has constantly destroyed societies. And Even the secular, or I would say atheist historians like Ludwig von Mises and even Hayek and so forth, where these guys weren't Christians, but they actually loved Christianity because of its embracing of individual liberty and the contrast from all of these other forms of monarchies and socialism and so forth. But again, socialism was first, or I should say communism, the first pinning of communism onto paper wasn't in the 1860s by Marx and Engels. It was back 600 years before Christ by a guy by the name of Plato. If you ever read The Republic, that was the first concept written on paper of the state having full control, dictating who marries who, controlling propaganda, control the state controlled everything in the Republic. So that was the first pinning, and it's just been a regurgitation of this failed concept. And every time a society has tried to implement those, every time they have fallen, they have capitulated, they've been destroyed. And most always, they're destroyed from within. And so that's why you see all of our problems and our turmoil. And it's scary, and it's frustrating to know that there are so many people here that are inculcated and brainwashed with this concept of socialism. The government will give it to me. We've got to give the government the power because they're going to give it to me. So all these kids running around and all these people in the streets wanting government control, how did this happen? Well, I'm going to get into all of that, but I actually get into all of that, how this has all happened in my first book, and my second book is The Strategy. So the first book, those first four books of the historical narrative of liberty, the innovation of a new nation, the obfuscation of the Constitution, and then the constitutional fix. Those are the four books that are in the one. Those four books are literally the argument. It's an irrefutable argument that there's only one way we're going to be able to save this republic, and one way we'll be able to save our Constitution. The second book is The Strategy of How We Do That. And throughout the show, I'll be getting into that. But that's why I started this whole thing off with, at the very beginning of the show, I said that this is an educational grassroots show. And so I need your help. I need your support. And if you know companies that are looking for an opportunity to save, you know, because I understand advertising money is a tax write-off. But if you're going to write off and you're going to advertise, how about supporting a program that's one educational and is designed to actually improve your environment as a business? Because if you understand Republic Review and Reclaiming the Republic, I and this show and those who are working with me are all about trying to deregulate and free the shackles that have been placed onto small businesses and even big businesses, not the global businesses, because they're behind most of these shackles that have been put on us. So if you're listening, and we're going to clean up a lot of these commercials, because most of these commercials that we piped over from ACN at the very beginning when we're pulling in or requesting people to advertise and other people to sponsor and so forth. So anyway, this is still a work in progress, but the content isn't. The content is definitely a granite footstool that you can stand on and leverage, and we can literally take this republic back. So let me move on with my monologue. And this monologue, I'm not even going to get finished in this first week, maybe the first few weeks, because I'm actually going to go through the Federalist Papers. I'm going to go through some of the ratification debates. I'm going to go through these documents so that there's no doubt in your mind what the framers were saying and how limited that general government was. The empirical data is overwhelming. If you get a chance to watch my YouTube video when I was a keynote speaker to the Constitution Association, anybody that reads through the Federalist Papers and the ratification debates, because these were the arguments in selling that Constitution, then you just, it's it's done. It's a hands down deal. It is over. The federal government is limited to what is in that Constitution and only that. And there is no back door. There's no sliding of men in robes or the oligarchy of robes being able to, you know, move us in one direction or another. That's all a fallacy. And they've convinced us that they can do these things. So let me go in with the little bit I have, because I want to talk a little bit about the Constitutional Convention. If you understand these disparate colonies and their disparate religions and their commerce and everything else, they had significant differences. And if you understand what they had to do to put those things aside so that they could work together in the Revolution and so forth and unite, it was very impressive. And it's something that we still have to do today, because we're going to have to separate our differences. I'm going to talk about those. Same thing with religion. There's all these different religions, you know, that don't bring the Catholics, or don't bring those Mormons, or keep those evangelicals out of here. We're going to have to put aside those differences. And in addition, we have to put aside our self-interest. This show is not a money-making show. As a matter of fact, if I have my way and we can get this thing going, and within 4 years we have a Republic Review going, then this show will literally go away, or it'll take its own volition, because this is not about money. Those framers did not have an endeavor where they were going to go, oh, I'm going to go and teach people all of these things and make all of this money. If they would have done that, then there was no way that the Lord would have inspired them in creating a nation of liberty. It would have been just literally a bunch of scam artists scamming people. Now, there were nefarious men that maybe have seemed noble at the time, but I'm telling you, they were nefarious, because they were literally undermining the intent and the actual document of the Constitution, that contract. They were violating that. But going into this, moving forward, we're going to have to use those exact same principles of putting aside our differences and putting aside our self-interest. And we're going to have to volunteer. We're going to have to use our resources. We're going to have to use our opportunity costs to work together so that we can all get educated and get smart. Remember, the greatest weapon that we have is knowledge, because knowledge is power. And if we can exert that power with knowledge, we can exert that against our enemies, and we can also exert that against our leaders. If we can start teaching our leaders to understand what they need to be doing, and our politicians, if not, then we're going to get them out of there. We're going to put politicians in that have a respect and are using the constitutional principles. No more compromises. Compromise means we all lose something. Well, that was perfect timing. As I can hear, the music is coming. As that means that the end of the show is coming. I will be back next week. And please stay tuned, and we will build on from what I've talked about today next week, Wednesday from 4 to 5. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.